Welcome to the deep dive. We are jumping straight into something really critical for anyone navigating the business world right now, choosing a reliable provider for, you know, business email lists in 2025.
Yeah, it's a big one.
You've shared a really valuable source with us. It's basically a comprehensive checklist, kind of a blueprint for making smart decisions in this space, which, let's be honest, is changing really fast.
It really is. Constant evolution.
So our mission today: take this checklist, really dive deep into it, and pull out the absolutely essential points you need to understand. Because look, with privacy rules tightening up, personalization becoming totally key, and just less room for error, picking the right provider is way more than just buying names.
Oh, completely.
It's about getting genuinely qualified, compliant, and, you know, engaged contacts that can actually turn into customers.
That's really the core of it. What might have seemed like a simple buy a few years ago is now, well, it's a strategic investment in your future growth pipeline.
Yeah.
If you're not rigorous about who you partner with here, especially now in 2025, you're not just risking, like, campaign results. You're risking serious compliance headaches and real damage to your brand's reputation.
Okay, right. Let's unpack the first big piece of this puzzle from the source: data accuracy and validation. The checklist puts this right up front, calls it a core deliverable, not just some afterthought.
Absolutely essential.
So what specifically should you be looking for here? The source highlights things like real-time email validation, basically checking if an email address is even deliverable before you hit send.
Yeah, that's crucial. And they get specific on metrics, too. Look for bounce rate guarantees. They mention providers should confidently promise a rate typically below 5%.
That 5% figure, why is that so important?
Well, because going over that can quickly flag you as a sender with poor list hygiene. It hurts your overall sender score.
Right. And if you're doing more than just email, maybe multi-channel stuff, the source notes the importance of, like, phone and postal verification, too, where it's relevant.
And freshness. This is a huge point.
Yeah.
The source really stresses that good providers have regular refresh cycles, ideally updating their data every 30 to 90 days. Data just decays so incredibly fast, you know.
People move jobs, companies change.
Exactly. It gets stale quickly.
Okay, this is where it gets really interesting, I think. Why does this level of accuracy and freshness matter so much? The source details the ripple effect. Even a small increase, say just 1% more bounces, can significantly hurt your sender reputation. And that affects all your emails, right? Not just the ones to that specific list.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
A poor sender reputation means fewer emails even make it to the inbox across your entire domain. Plus, think about it, sending to outdated contacts, people who've left the company, changed roles.
Yeah.
It's just wasted money and effort.
Pure waste.
Data decay isn't some abstract idea. It's a direct hit to your marketing budget and effectiveness.
Okay. Moving on then, the source makes it absolutely clear that compliance, you know, with privacy and anti-spam regulations isn't a nice to have anymore. It's a minimum standard.
Non-negotiable.
Especially with major global laws like GDPR in Europe, CCPA in California, and all of these other regional rules popping up or evolving.
Yeah, this section is critical. What kind of proof should a provider give you? Well, explicit consent records for each contact, that's key.
Right.
The source specifically calls out needing double opt-in data, particularly if you're targeting customers in, say, Europe or Canada, where the rules are generally stricter.
And obviously there have to be clear, easy unsubscribe options. But maybe the most critical point the source raises here is data lineage documentation.
Yes.
The ability for the provider to show you when, where, and exactly how they got each contact's information.
And this raises a really important question. Why is proving that data origin so vital for you, the buyer? Because ultimately, the legal responsibility for sending compliant communication, that lands on you.
Right, not the provider.
Exactly. If a regulator comes asking questions, you need to be able to show clearly that your contacts were obtained legally and ethically. Without solid data lineage from your provider, you're just exposed to some serious legal heat.
And those penalties aren't trivial. The source highlights what could happen if you don't pick a compliant provider. Fines. We're talking potentially thousands to millions, depending on where you are.
Ouch.
Severe reputational damage that trust with your audience just evaporates. And massively reduced deliverability because your emails start getting flagged left, right, and center spam.
It's easy to sort of underestimate the downstream pain of non-compliance. It can genuinely cripple your ability to reach your customers at all.
Absolutely. Which leads us perfectly into the next key area, deliverability and sender reputation. I mean, the best list ever is totally useless if your emails just bounce or end up buried in the spam folder, right?
Completely useless. Yeah. And this is heavily influenced by your provider's own practices.
So according to the source, what signals that a provider has strong deliverability? They point to providers who only use permission-based lists. That means contacts have actually opted in somehow, somewhere.
Right, not just scraped. And they should maintain low spam complaint and unsubscribe rates themselves across their own sending. It shows they respect inboxes.
Okay, what else?
Look for providers who use seed testing data. That involves sending test emails to a sample of different inbox types, Gmail, Outlook, etc., to check placement before they send to your main list. It's a good clue about where your emails are likely to land.
That makes sense. Proactive checking.
Yeah. And they also mentioned providers offering things like access to dedicated IPs or domain reputation tools as positive signs.
And then what can you measure on your end to see how it's working once you start using a list?
Well, the checklist suggests focusing on your own metrics. Things like your inbox placement rates you should be aiming for over 85%, ideally.
85%, okay.
Track your open rates, obviously benchmarked against your specific industry, and look at engagement depth, you know, clicks, replies, maybe time spent reading if your platform tracks that.
What's fascinating here, I think, is how directly the provider's practices, how they get their data, how they keep it clean, feeds straight into your sender reputation.
It's a direct link. A provider that sources clean, genuinely opted-in data helps you build and protect your own ability to consistently reach the inbox.
It really is a partnership for deliverability success.
Yeah.
You need them to do their part well.
Okay, moving on. Let's talk segmentation and targeting capabilities. The source makes it really clear this isn't just about, you know, making emails feel a bit more personal. It's essential for boosting ROI.
Absolutely.
Making sure you're hitting the right people with the right message.
Gets rid of the scattergun approach.
Exactly. So what kind of segmentation filters does the source mention are useful? It lists core categories like firmographics, that's the details about the company itself, right? Like industry, size, maybe revenue.
Yeah. And then there's technographics. That's all about the tech a company uses. Maybe their CRM, their cloud platform, specific software they run. Super valuable for tech companies selling to other businesses.
Oh, for sure. They also mentioned the standard stuff. Geographics, obviously location, and filtering by job titles, you know, C-suite execs down to specific functional roles.
But here's where it gets really powerful, according to the source. The advanced capabilities.
Like what?
Things like intent data. This is data that signals purchase interest based on online behavior. Maybe someone downloaded a specific white paper or visited certain product pages or searched specific keywords.
Ah, okay. So active buying signals.
Exactly. And predictive modeling, using data analysis to basically score contacts on how likely they are to engage or convert. Plus, the ability to integrate all this with your CRM feedback loop so you learn which segments perform best historically.
Wow, okay. So connecting this back, that kind of sophisticated segmentation, it really transforms a generic list into a targeted pipeline, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Reaching someone in the right role at the right kind of company who is maybe already showing interest, that radically increases your chances of actually making a connection, getting a conversion.
Right. Okay. But how do you figure out if a provider is actually any good at all this? The source includes a section on reputation and track record. Due diligence, essentially.
Yep. Got to check them out.
So what should you be investigating? The source says look for customer references, obviously. Case studies. Dig into how long they've actually been operating, especially if you're in a sensitive or regulated industry.
Experience matters there.
Independent reviews are key. And ask for success rates, maybe from sample campaigns they've run that are similar to what you want to do.
And the source is also pretty explicit about the red flags here. Things like getting vague answers about how they actually got their data. That's a big one.
The next back to compliance.
Exactly. Or maybe a lack of a clear satisfaction guarantee or a refund policy. Or any metrics that just sound, you know, too good to be true without solid proof to back them up.
Yeah, if it sounds unbelievable, it probably is. Transparency really seems to be your friend here. A reputable provider should be pretty open about their processes and performance, shouldn't they?
They absolutely should. If they're cagey, especially about data origin, that should set off major alarm bells. It links right back to all those compliance and accuracy risks we were just talking about.
Makes sense. Okay, let's look at customization and scalability. The source notes that, you know, not every business has the same needs, and a good provider should be able to adapt.
Flexibility is key.
So what kind of features should you look for that offer that flexibility? The checklist mentions things like self-serve portals, places where you can go in, apply filters, and select the specific data you need when you need it.
Yeah, put you in control. Also, look for custom enrichment services. Hmm. The source gives an example, like maybe appending LinkedIn profile URLs to your contacts. Super useful for B2B sales teams, right?
Oh, definitely.
API access is also crucial if you want to sync data directly with your CRM or your marketing automation platform. Keeps everything aligned.
Yeah, avoids manual uploads and data silos.
And look for flexible license agreements. Is it a one-time purchase, a recurring subscription, maybe pricing per campaign? You need options that fit your budget and how you work.
Why do these features matter so much? What's the real benefit?
Well, they stop you from overspending on tons of irrelevant contacts you don't actually need. And they let you scale your efforts up or down as your business grows or your marketing strategy pivots. Scalability isn't just about getting bigger lists. It's about having that flexible partnership.
Okay. This naturally raises the question of cost versus value. The source encourages a really strategic mindset here. Don't just fixate on the cost per record, but focus more on the cost per qualified lead.
That's the smarter metric.
What are the common pricing models you might bump into? The source lists cost per thousand records. That's the classic CPM model.
Yep. Then there's pay per lead, where you might only pay for contacts that meet certain specific verification criteria, like title and industry confirmed.
Okay.
And flat rate subscription models, which can work well if you have high volume ongoing outreach needs. Predictable cost.
So how do you truly assess the value you're getting for that cost? It's not just the price tag.
Right. The source recommends asking for trial runs or, you know, sample data so you can test the quality yourself. Look at lead to conversion rates from any past campaigns where you use third-party data. And track engagement metrics opens. Clicks on any sample data you test drive.
It's about trying to calculate the potential ROI, isn't it?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And honestly, the hidden costs of poor data quality, all the wasted time, the marketing dollars spent on non-existent contacts, the damage to your deliverability, the potential fines we talked about.
Yeah.
Those almost always outweigh any upfront savings you might get from picking a cheaper but lower quality provider.
Yeah.
Value is really in the outcome, not just the initial price.
That's a great point. Okay, the source also touches on support and service levels. They suggest that the really top providers offer more than just data. They offer a genuine partnership.
Yeah, they should feel like an extension of your team.
So what does good support actually look like in this context? Things like dedicated account managers who actually understand your goals, your industry.
Someone you can actually talk to.
Right. Service level agreements or SLAs that guarantee response times if you have an issue. Comprehensive training resources, maybe webinars, guides, a solid onboarding process. And the source even mentions data consulting a provider who can help you refine your targeting strategy.
Having that kind of provider, one who acts more like a strategic partner, helping you navigate the complexities of the data and the changing landscape, that can be incredibly valuable. Especially with regulations and tech always shifting.
They become invested in your success with the data.
Precisely. Focused on data success, not just selling a list.
Okay, the source then circles back to some really explicit red flags to watch for. Mm. It kind of pulls together warnings from across the checklist.
Good to have these clear.
Yeah. They list things like providers who are selling lists they just purchased wholesale from some other third party. That's often a sign they don't really control the data origin or hygiene.
Big red flag. You lose that lineage trail.
Other major ones. Working with providers who have no clear contract or really vague terms, using what are obviously obsolete contact databases. Maybe they have really old timestamps or verification dates.
Stale data warning.
And crucially, providers who have no clear documentation for how they handle opt-out requests, or worse, no proof of explicit consent for the contacts in the first place.
These flags tie directly back to those fundamental risks we've been discussing all along. Terrible data hygiene, potential compliance nightmares,
yeah.
And ultimately inaccurate data that just guarantees campaign failure and wasted money. They're basically signals the provider isn't operating ethically or frankly competently.
And those signals are your cue to, well, run the other way.
Pretty much. Plenty of good providers out there. No need to risk it.
Okay. Finally, the source gives a brief sort of comparative overview of the different types of providers you might encounter out there in the market.
Good to know the landscape.
You have your traditional list brokers. The source says pros are often wide reach, pretty fast turnaround. Cons. quality can be really variable, and transparency about data origin might be low.
Yeah, the classic model, but maybe less reliable now.
Then there are data aggregators, known for providing huge volumes of data, lots of segmentation options. But the downside is their data is typically compiled from public sources or maybe resold, which often leads to maybe lower compliance standards compared to sources that focus purely on opt-in data.
Right, less control over consent. Then you have niche data firms. These guys specialize in really highly targeted industry-specific contacts.
Okay.
Their data can be super high quality, very relevant if you're in that niche.
Yeah.
But they tend to be more expensive, and the total volume of contacts might be limited compared to the big aggregators.
Trade-offs. And lastly, intent-based platforms. These are the ones focused on identifying contacts, showing those active buying signals we talked about.
The hot leads.
Yeah. They offer high conversion potential because of that behavioral segmentation. But the cons, they usually require more sophisticated technical integration with your systems and often a larger budget.
So understanding these different models helps you choose the type of provider whose whole approach lines up best with your specific campaign goals, your budget, and, importantly, your tolerance for risk. It's about finding the right tool for your particular job.
What's really fascinating here, though, is how the market itself is expected to evolve, you know, in 2025 and looking beyond. The source highlights some key trends that are shifting the focus.
Yeah, the future view. They mention things like AI-powered list curation, using artificial intelligence to analyze data, identify and score contacts based on ideal customer profiles and how likely they are to engage.
Smarter targeting through AI? Makes sense. There's also a big push towards what they call privacy-first infrastructure.
Okay, what's that mean?
It means zero-party and first-party data, that's data you collect directly from your customers with their explicit consent, will become increasingly central. Why? Because third-party data is just getting harder to access and use compliantly.
So more focus on data you own and control.
Exactly. Real-time personalization is another trend. Using live data feeds to tailor messages almost instantly, that's becoming kind of expected now.
Mm-hmm.
And B2B identity graphs. These are richer, sort of multi-channel profiles built by connecting data points across different sources. They offer a more dynamic view of a prospect than just a static list entry.
More of a holistic picture.
Yeah. And the source predicts that providers will start differentiating themselves less on just how many contacts they have and more on the data intelligence they can provide. The insights, the relevance baked into the contacts, that feels like a fundamental shift in value.
It really does. It means providers need to offer more than just rows in a spreadsheet. They need to offer smart, actionable data that helps you target effectively and compliantly. That's the future.
Okay, so I quickly summarize everything from the source's final checklist. When you're evaluating providers, you need to ask, is their data accurate and fresh? Really fresh.
Decades.
Is it compliant globally or where you need it? Can they actually guarantee deliverability? How detailed and useful are their segmentation options? What's their track record, their reputation like? How good is their support?
Do they answer the phone?
Right. Is the pricing clear and does it feel aligned with the value you expect to get? And crucially, have you spotted any of those major red flags we talked about?
Running through those questions really covers the essential bases we've unpacked today.
So as we wrap up this deep dive, it's pretty clear that choosing a business email list provider in 2025, well, it's not a minor task you delegate lightly. It's a really strategic investment.
Absolutely. The right provider is actually a partner, someone who helps you build a consistent, a scalable, and importantly, an ethical pipeline for future growth.
And using a detailed checklist, like the one we've just walked through based on the source material, is absolutely crucial for reducing your risk to your campaign performance, risk to your compliance standing, and positioning you for the best possible ROI.
The source leaves us with a thought that I think really resonates. Don't just buy a list. Invest in a pipeline of opportunities.
Yeah, that sums it up nicely. Okay, here's a final thought for you, the listener, to maybe ponder. Given those future trends we just touched on, the AI curation, the B2B identity graphs, this shift towards providers offering data intelligence rather than just volume, how might you start to shift your own thinking about potential contacts?
Mm-hmm.
Moving away from seeing them simply as, you know, static entries on a list and towards viewing them as a dynamic source of intelligence, uncovering potential opportunities for your business. Something to think about as you make your next move in this space.
Food for thought.
That's all for this deep dive.